And Alter Rebbe says, Ubaze with this perception of self-orientation, Mafridim es atzmo mikdushas shel makim baruch. They separate themselves from the holiness of Hashem. Since they do not efface themselves before Him, for the supernal holiness rests only on that which is surrendered to Him, as explained above in chapter 6. Since they experience themselves separate, they do not surrender. They are self-oriented, egotistical realities. Therefore, with that, they separate themselves from Hashem's Kedusha. There was a Jew in the times of the Baal Shem Tov. He was a Parush. A Parush was an isolated Jew who afflicted himself with many physical afflictions. He really mortified his body. And he attempted to serve Hashem day and night. He was an ascetic. He considered himself a very pious human being. One issue he had, major gasus ruach, because he was Mr. Perfected Human Being, Mr. Religious, a religious, pious individual. And Gasus HaRuach was just a major force that was characterizing his life. It was all about seeking his own perfection, and that was it. No, he heard about the Bisol Baal Shem Tov. He thought, ah, there's another tzaddik in the universe. Let me go and get what I can get from him in order to enhance my character. So he traveled to the Baal Shem Tov, to Mezhebush. He entered into the Baal Shem Tov's portals, and the Baal Shem Tov gazed at him and quoted the pasuk and said, "Hayisaseh ish b'mistarim va'ani lo yarenu." The Navi tells us, "Can man conceal himself in concealments, and I will not see him?" So the Baal Shem Tov said, "Hayisaseh ish b'mistarim." There can be a man who is a nistar, who conceals himself and separates himself from the entire universe and totally dedicates himself to celestial, spiritual, sublime realities. But va'ani, at the core of that is the ani, the I, the ego, says Hashem lo yarenu. I can't look at him. I have no relationship with him. The Jew received the message. He was arrogant, but he wasn't foolish. And he returned home. And he really began working on himself and refining himself. He came back a few years later to the Baal Shem Tov. He walked through the Baal Shem Tov's doors. And the Baal Shem Tov immediately began, "Hayisaseh ish b'mistarim va'ani loy erenu." If a man conceals himself and he takes the ani and he makes from the ani loy erenu, then I can see him. One of the greatest talmidim of the Magid, the greatest students of the Magid, was the holy Reb Aaron of Karlin, Reb Aaron Karlina. Once there was a Jew, an old-time friend of Reb Aaron Kalina, who was coming back from the Magid. The Rebbe, the Magid of Mizrich, was the successor of the Baal Shem Tov. He was also the Rebbe of the Alter Rebbe, the Magid of Mizrich. Reb Aaron was in Karlin, and this Jew was coming back from the Magid. He decided, he was traveling by Karlin, to stop off at Reb Aaron's home. He came to Reb Aaron's home late at night, and obviously he saw the light burning, candle burning, or some light. So he went and he knocked on the door. Reb Aaron was learning. In the middle of the night, Reb Aaron was totally engulfed in Limud HaTorah. The holy Reb Aaron Kalin asks, "Veridus, who's there?" So he says, "Ich, I'm here." Reb Aaron says, "Ver, who's there?" He says, "Ich." Rav Aaron asks again, "Veridarten." He says, "Ich." You know, it's a friend, it's a buddy. I'm going to go identify myself with a name. It's embarrassing. You say, "I," and that's it. Rav Aaron wasn't answering the door. Finally, he identifies himself with his name. Rav Aaron comes and he opens the door. Shalom Aleichem. The Yid says, "Rav Aaron, I was just by the Magid, by the Holy Rebbe, the Magid of Mizrich, for a few months. I learned from him so much. And traveling home, I wanted to stop by in your holy chambers." Rav Aaron says, "You might have been by the Magid, but you haven't learned anything from the Magid. The Magid taught us, as a ich is done nar einer. There is only one I." So the Jew went right back to the market. He went right back to the market. I quoted a few weeks ago that Tzemach Tzedek writes in Derech Mitzvah Secha that kol ikir inyan hachsidus is lasis me'ani ayin. The primary function of chassidus is to metamorphosize the ani into the same letters with a different configuration. Ayin. Nothingness. And it's significant that it's the same letters. Because to make from the ani ayin, the person does not have to change. He just has to reconfigurate the very same letters. So what Alter Rebbe is saying here is essentially that's what Gassus HaRuach is all about. The Hayisasir Ish Bamistarim Vani cannot allow their Enu. The ego, in other words, the ego, from the Alter Rebbe's perspective, is man's enemy. You know what your biggest enemy is? No one outside of you. Your own ego. Our egos are the biggest obstacles for ourselves to be in touch with life, Pashat. A human being who is defined exclusively by his ego can never experience life. He's always experiencing himself and everything. He's self-conscious at every moment of his life. Where am I in the picture? You could never enjoy the objective world. You can never enjoy another person. He's always in the mode of protection. A person is in a mode of protection, can't listen to someone else. Can be in touch with anything else, cannot be in touch with life, cannot experience life. Because he's there constantly and he's always fighting everything. A man that's characterized in ego is always at war. Every conversation is about a war. Because if it affected my ego a drop, I'm finished. I immediately have to protect myself. What is worse, it does not allow ourselves to experience the rhythm of life being an expression of godliness. It makes that wall, that separation, that it's unbelievable. You know, Hashem usually doesn't acknowledge weaknesses. Because he's complete. One thing he acknowledges a weakness, a limitation. The Gemara says in Erkin Daf Tesrov that Hashem tells an arrogant person, "Ein ani v'hu yecheilun lada b'kfifachas." We cannot both coexist under the same roof. Hashem says, "I cannot. You fill the space. Your ego is filling every single space. It does not allow you to hear any deeper voice. It doesn't allow you to hear the voice of life, the rhythm, the melody that characterizes your own identity at that very moment. It doesn't allow you to tune into yourself, to tune into the universe. Ayin is not about a human being becoming a downtrodden, valueless, insignificant creature reduced to nothingness. On the contrary, it's about suspending your own ego, creating a space for the music of your own divinity and your own soul. It's allowing yourself to become a channel for the divine energy of the universe. Then life begins. A human being without an ego can be happy. An ego makes us miserable. essentially, Gashus HaRuach makes us the most distant from ourselves. Doesn't allow us to experience ourselves. Our true needs, our true desires, and so forth. We daven three times a day, the Alter Rebbe says in a maimer, just because of the ego, no other reason. No other reason. People say, why do I have to daven three times a day? Why do I have to daven three times a day? The question is, why shouldn't we be davening every moment? The ego is not only there three times a day. It's always getting in touch with the energy of the universe rather than the matter. The transcendence, not getting paralyzed, God forbid, by the ego. The ego can paralyze us very powerful ways. It doesn't allow us to live, really. The yeshes that characterizes the universe. So Gashus HaRuach, the Alter Rebbe says, is Shkula Kavei Dezara. Because the essence of Gashus HaRuach is the human being perceives himself as an egotistical entity divorced from Hashem's Kedusha. And that's the beginning of Avodah Zarah. Because in the true Achdus, that doesn't exist. V'lachain, therefore he continues, V'lachain, ah? V'lachain nikroyim ture de prude b'zayra kadosh. For this reason, the Zohar calls the klippos peaks of separation. An interesting term. Turi de Pruda, that's the term the Kabbalah uses. Mountains of separation. Because they are as haughty as mountain peaks, and for that reason themselves, they are Pruda, they are separated. Because they are Turi, because they are mountains, they're also Nifrit. The holy Rebbe Avraham HaMalach was a very close friend of the Alter Rebbe. He was a son of the Maggid. Rebbe Avraham the Angel, they called him. You can understand what type of personality he was. That was the term that was attributed to him. Rebbe Avraham the Angel. He once came to a city, and in that city there were many Jews who were antagonistic to him, to his father. But nevertheless, they heard Rebbe Avraham HaMalach is in town. Who's not going to come greet him? Ancient times in Eastern Europe. So the whole city came to greet him. And Rebbe Avraham walked into the shul. It was a huge shul. And there was a huge window. He walked over to the window and he looked out the window. And in the distance there was a huge mountain. And he's staring and staring and staring. And there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of Jews gathered in shul that want to say shalom to him, that want to communicate with him, that want to seek his advice. And he's gazing at the mountain. Finally, one man who was of a certain disposition, let's put it that way. He was a young man. He says, I'm not going to tolerate this anymore. He comes over to Rebbe Avraham HaMalach, and he says, I don't understand you. What's this? Do you feel that you can step on people this way? What are you gazing there at that mountain? Tell me, what are you looking at? I'll tell you. What's there in that mountain? What are you looking at? What are you staring at? Is the mountain more important than hundreds of people that are waiting for you? Rebbe Avraham says, I'll tell you, I'm staring at a very extraordinary phenomenon. A piece of dirt, a piece of mud, a piece of earth, essentially valueless and insignificant, but nevertheless considers himself so haughty and so arrogant that it inflates itself and becomes a mountain. He says, and that's an extraordinary phenomenon. And of course, the young man understood. Turi de Pruda. Klippos are Turi de Pruda. It begins with being a mountain. And a mountain means that you're separated. V'harezu kfire b'achdusei ha'amitis, says the Alter Rebbe. Huh? Why he was looking at the mountain? Why was the Torah given on a mountain? Chazal says the machich mekol turaya, but why in a mountain bechlal? You want to know? So everyone can see. Okay, that's a balabatisha reason. Everyone can see. So why not? So why not a taller mountain? It was given on a mountain, interestingly, but machich mekol turaya. It was the smallest of all mountains. It says therefore Sinai wasn't in the competition. The mountains were competing with each other. Who's going to get the Torah? Sinai wasn't in the competition. Nebuch. It was a humble mountain. So Hashem said, I'll give it on Sinai. Why in a mountain bechlal? The reason is because that demonstrates that bittul, surrender, does not mean that a person becomes a lowly piece of earth that can be stepped on. That's not what bittul means. That's negative energy, it's not bittul. Bittul does not mean you lose your security, inner self-confidence. Bittul means you lose your unhealthy ego. You lose the drive to cover up. You lose the drive that's dictating and putting you in the center of the universe, divorced from godliness. Bittul not only does not reduce one's security, it enhances it infinitely. It gives him Hashem security. Bittul means you're not important because you're important. You have the divine importance, divine significance. Yeah? No. There are various levels. That's a personal relationship. It means a personal relationship. So the klippas are called in Zohar turi depur, the peaks of separation. And this independence constitutes a denial of Hashem's true unity. Apparently, in the normal interpretation of Hashem's unity, gasas haruach is not a compromise of Hashem's unity. Why? You're not denying that He's the creator of the universe. You're not even denying that He's one God. You're saying He's one God, and I'm arrogant. But He says it's a kfirah ba'achdusei ha'amitis. In His true unity, discussed in the previous chapters, gasas haruach, arrogance, is a denial in Hashem's true unity. So from the Alter Rebbe's chassidus perspective, an arrogant person is a subtle form of an oivad avodah zarah. A person who walks around with an inflated ego, or even not such an inflated ego, but that sense of separateness, where I, the ani, as separate from Hashem's I, that is a form of avodah zarah, because it's a kfirah in His true unity. Why? The kula kamei kilei chashem. The truth is that His unity implies that all is esteemed as nothing before Him. Kula kamei is kilei chashem. Ubatul be'emes lo yisbarach, and all is utterly nullified before Him. Uliritzaynai, and before His will, hamachayes kulam, which animates them all, umahava oisame ayin liyesh tamit, and which constantly brings them into being out of nothingness. That is the truth, that everything is nullified before Him, before His will, which is constantly vitalizing them and bringing them into being. And as a result of that, as discussed at length, they have no reality independent of His reality. Since He is constantly bringing them into being every single moment from something to nothing. Mamish, no reality independent of Him. Nevertheless, the Gas HaRuach walks the face of this earth, treads His path in life with a whole other feeling, with a whole other perception, with a whole other sense. So the Alter Rebbe says it's Shkula Kavodah Zarah, because this is Kfirah in His Achdus HaMitis. This is a denial of Hashem's true unity. Exactly. Sometimes a person can behave totally insensitive, for example, to his wife or to a child. Why? Huh? The name of God. The name of God. I have to now do things for God. It's all about your ego. On the contrary, that itself is kfirah ba'achdusei ha'amitis. It's a kfirah in God, that. It's totally not attuned to godliness. It's an institutionalized dogma that you're calling God. But that's the nature, that's the vicious nature of ego. And it's very, very powerful, and it sometimes impacts our decisions in a powerful way. Like sometimes, we know that to do something is healthy. For example, to confess a wrongdoing, to make up with someone that we have an argument with. That would bring us happiness, and it would rectify a situation. But the ego stands in the way. I should say that. You're going to be humiliating myself. You're not going to be humiliating yourself. You're going to be humbling yourself. There's a big difference. The difference between humiliating yourself is negative energy. Humbling yourself is positive energy. Humiliating yourself means you become a piece of dirt. Humbling yourself means you allow the voice of your soul to be heard within you. What do I mean by energy? Let's conclude with a story. We could talk about that afterwards. So there was a Yid whose name was Reb David. We have one of our own. He was a simple Jew. He did not suffer from gashus haruach. Not at all. By the way, I just want to say, tell you one more word before. The Alter Rebbe writes in Lakut HaTorah, gives us an interpretation of gashus haruach, a gewaldic interpretation. Gashus haruach, that the ruchni is begashus. Gashus haruach, your spirituality is coarse. That's a deeper level of gashus haruach. That one spirituality is a coarse spirituality. It's not a refined spirituality. Gashus haruach, usually a coarse, egotistical, self-centered individual. Rebbe says he could be very spiritual, but it's a coarse spirituality. Unrefined spirituality. So there was a Jew whose name was Reb David. He was mamish, he was a simple Jew, but a very God-fearing human being, a kind Jew. Nebuch, there's many God-fearing Jews, a captain, he didn't have a penny to his name. He was poverty-stricken and was really, really poor. And he had a wife and children. He could barely feed them. But the worst day, the worst holiday for him was Sukkot. Because Sukkot, he would see all the distinguished Mizrach Jews. Mizrach Jews are those Jews that get to daven at the eastern wall of the synagogue. They're called Mizrach Yidden. If they're on the second bench, it's an insult. He saw the Mizrach Yidden, their beautiful Esregim, that they had the beautiful citrons and Esregim they have for Sukkot. And his Esreg was Nebuch, so small, so skinny, so frail, so pale. His whole life he desired from the depth of his heart that he should be able to have one of those jumbo, exquisite, beautiful Esregim. He just wanted to be, he loved the mitzvah so much and he wanted to perform it in the real way. So one Sukkot he decided, that's it. I'm going to save up. And without consulting anyone, every day he saved up a little bit of the so little money that he earned, but he saved up a little for it for the next Sukkot. And 1 year went by, and then he saved for another year, and then another year, and he saved for 5 years. And he managed to save up 1,000 ruble. 1,000 ruble. And he was such a happy Jew. A few weeks before Sukkot, he has 1,000 ruble. He can buy the most beautiful, extraordinary, amazing, exquisite Esreg in town with his 1,000 ruble. There was no Jew happier than Reb David. It came a few weeks before Sukkot. He went to the store. He bought the most beautiful of Esregim. It was just beautiful from every side and every angle. It had this most amazing pittim on the top. That little, what is it called? Chupchik. And he came home. His wife greets him. And this Jew was so happy, so relaxed, so tranquil, so overtaken with joy. His wife sees the Esreg. David? This is what you did with the money? Your children and I are starving for 5 years. We barely had bread and milk in the morning. And you took that money, and what did you use that money for? To buy yourself a fancy Esrik. And she began shouting and screaming, and she was so upset, she took the Esrik, she bit off the pittum. She bit off the pittum. An Esrig with a bit off pittum is disqualified. There went the Esrig, the 1,000 ruble, the 5 years. Reb David, listen. Reb David stood in one place. He looked at his wife. And he said, "Yes, Master of the Universe, I know. I don't deserve to have such a beautiful Estragon Sukkos. I don't deserve to have such a beautiful Estragon." The Baal Shem Tov told the story over to his students in Mezhebush. He was a Jew from Mezhebush. And the Baal Shem Tov said, "Since the day of the Akedah, since the day that Hashem came to Avraham and requested from him to go bring his own son as an offering for Hashem, since the that day and the test that was given to Avraham, there was never a test that was presented to a Jew that was so powerful as the test that was given to Reb David. How are we going to react to his wife?" Have a wonderful week.
Rabbi Jacobson delivers this weekly class on the Tanya at Heichal Menachem in the Borough Park section of Brooklyn, New York. To order additional tapes or albums, please call Heichal Menachem at 718-633-1076.